The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Health Hour on Inform Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW and streaming to CHDTV. I'm your host, Bernadette Pager. So glad you could join us. We've got two great hours of radio today. In the first hour, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Michael Gaeta, and we're going to be taking your calls. So let me give that number right now, just in case anybody's listening who wants to, you know, go grab a pen and pencil. The studio line is 1-888-298-KKNW. That's 1-888-298-5569. If you're local, you can call 425-373-5527. So in this first hour, like I said, we've got Dr. Michael Gaeta. He's going to be coming on, and he's a wonderful holistic health practitioner. I see him there on the screen. Hello, Dr. Michael Gaeta.
Bernadette, so good to be back.
Oh, I love having you. I like in the beard. It's a new look for you. Yeah.
2024 experiment.
Cool. And Michael, you know, in the second hour, I'm really excited too, because there's a wonderful author whose name is Sally Saxon. I don't know if you've read her book,
The COVID-19
Vaccines and Beyond, What the Medical Industrial Complex is Not Telling Us.
Wow. That's great.
It's, you know, listeners, you're going to want to stay for that second hour, because everything that's happened in the past 4 years, everything that we've learned about COVID, COVID shots, the global, it's all in one place. Mm. And it's written by an attorney. And it's really written from that point of view of, you be the jury. Here's the information. It's really good. I'm very excited about that. But this first hour, equally excited. So let me get a little business out of the way. So the views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the wonderful free speech platform, KKNW and CHDTV. Mm-hmm. And we're not giving medical or legal advice in either hour. Great conversation here. Just, you know, this is how we live an informed life. And this is what freedom is all about, is having these very important discussions. This must go on. So I really want to thank for this first hour, the Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense, the members of that chapter who give a little something every month to help support the Washington chapter, and to help keep this hour of radio, because this is not just CHDTV. This is like right on AM radio in Washington State, where folks really need, where censorship is as heavy as anywhere in the United States. Yeah. So great to have that going on. So Michael, let me tell listeners, you've been on the show several times since I've met you. Oh my goodness. How long ago has that been? But let me tell listeners a bit about you. I'm just going to read from your awesome website here. Dr. Michael Gaeta's purpose is to co-create a world of vital, resilient people who choose a lifestyle of nature first, drugs last. To accomplish this, he treats patients with Chinese and functional medicine and helps natural health professionals improve their patient care and practice success. Michael holds licenses in acupuncture, dietetics, nutrition, and massage therapy. He is also an herbalist and a doctor of acupuncture and oriental medicine. Over the last 30 years, he has trained over 20,000 practitioners. His teaching is informed by 34 years of successful clinical practice. He co-founded Acupuncture for Veterans, which provided free treatments in New York City. Michael's past president of the Acupuncture Society of New York, earning awards for State Association and State Association President of the Year. He appeared on CBS Early Show and NBC News, and his wellness podcast attracted over 100,000 subscribers. Michael is also a pianist and a composer, which was his first career. I love that you're so artistic as well as intelligent. Dr. Gaeta teaches a natural functional medicine certification program and several online CEU courses in clinical and business success. Dr. Gaeta is also active in promoting health choice and informed consent. And so I encourage everybody to visit the website. It's just his name, Michael Gaeta, and that's spelled G-A-E-T-A, michaelgaeta.com. And so here he is, Michael himself.
Great to be with you, Bernadette. Thank you.
Thank you. So I love nature first, drugs last. I mean, that just speaks to my heart. When did you first coin that phrase?
This was many years ago. I don't remember the exact date. It had to be at least 10 to 15 years ago, where I wanted to communicate something concisely, that the holistic approach to healthcare doesn't exclude conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. It includes it and simply has an approach that if there's a natural solution to whatever, as well as for prevention, early treatment, and wellness care, then let's do that first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, drugs aren't bad. They're just overused massively. We have 4% of the world's population consuming 50 to 60% of mm-hmm. all of the world's pharmaceutical drugs, mm-hmm. With the worst health outcomes of almost any developed nation at the greatest cost. So again, drugs aren't bad, but if there's a natural solution to anything person might want to take a pharmaceutical for, or maybe already, there's a natural solution at least 95% of the time, conservatively 95% of the time. So my whole thing is, you know, certainly continue my working with patients in the practice, but also training practitioners to be clinically excellent so that they can do a better job as a practitioner for their patients and help create this culture shift away from all drugs all the time to nature first, drugs last.
Yeah. Oh, I so love that. But what we have seen evolve over the past 100 years and escalating lately, is, you know, the business model of ignoring nature first.
Yes.
Of, you know, and really making it so much easier for people to even want to just pop a pill rather than make the more difficult lifestyle changes and natural healing approaches.
Yes.
But, you know, my outlook is that until the world has actually addressed the fundamental building blocks of health, we should not be rolling out expensive, invasive, risky products.
Yes.
Right? I mean, so once we make sure everybody's got like the three things, clean water, adequate sanitation, as best nutrition as we can get them, from there, see what is needed. And then where nature has solutions and then what is needed. But of course, if we were to actually start with the building blocks of health, see what nature has, and then see what's left over, the entire medical industrial complex would fall apart because the majority of their business is built upon people not having adequate nutrition, and not adequate exercise, and the whole thing. And then, of course, in developed nations, and then poor nations that don't even have proper sanitation yet.
Right.
So
that's true. And by the way, Bernadette, as you know, you just identified the reason why all of the epidemics of a century ago went away. You know, certainly had nothing to do with the vaccine program. It had to do with exactly what you said, improvements in living and working conditions, sanitation, clean water, nutrition, and hygiene. That's what got the job done. And that's, you know, was the original source of the epidemics was, you know, very unfavorable conditions as people migrated in the Industrial Revolution from the farms into the cities. You know, and just the infrastructure wasn't there. And, you know, it was a perfect breeding ground for all kinds of bad stuff to happen. And then as that got resolved, then those, you know, infectious epidemics went away.
Exactly. And so today, what I really want to talk about, and, you know, everything that we talk about here, it's well, if you go down and you begin looking at the HHS and the and CDC and all the powers that be, shouldn't be, you see that everything we're saying is accurate. The historical data is accurate. Yeah. It's all there. And in fact, they're paying more and more attention for their own reasons and in their own direction to the fact that the majority of health issues in the United States today are lifestyle related and completely under individual control. Now, they're hijacking that concept. And I want to do, I forget there's a particular term that we used. We covered it on a show a few months ago and I need to go back to it, but they're really attempting to kind of hijack what we do to make it look like they're going in a good direction. But then if you read deeply, they're like steering people away from grass-fed meat and to like fake foods. So they don't want to do that. But what I want to talk about today and what we're opening up the phone lines for are just, common chronic health issues that you know about, that we know about, that can be addressed with holistic approaches. So I'll let you begin. Where do you want to start? What health issue would you like to start talking about? And before you begin, let's give that number out again. If you want to call in your question to Dr. Geda, it is 1-888-298-5569. So go ahead.
Well, Brendan, I got to give an example. The thing you just said was so spot on. They pulled off this very clever scam about 10 years ago around statin drugs based on the disproven nonsensical cholesterol hypothesis that blood cholesterol has something to do with cardiovascular disease. So finally, a massive study came out at the end of 2013, and it was just overwhelming. It was 500,000 patients enrolled or considered in this meta-analysis. And it was utterly clear that cholesterol and saturated fat in the diet, blood cholesterol levels, you know, had nothing to do with cardiovascular disease, like zero. And in fact, when you looked at the actual data, it was an inverse relationship. The more saturated fat and cholesterol you consume, this is true worldwide, if you look at population studies in different countries, the less heart disease you have. So they were kind of, you know, after this whole statin era, which started in 1987 with Merck's Mevacor, really ramped up in 1991 with Merck's Lipitor. Finally, you know, it was just stuff people like me have been saying for many years, that cholesterol is not the issue, never was. So they came out with new guidelines, which sounded good. They're like, you know, maybe dietary cholesterol and blood cholesterol levels really aren't that important. I'm like, oh, this is looking good. So I thought they were going to kind of dial back the statin craze and say, you know, maybe it's not so effective, because now we have dozens of studies. These drugs are very dangerous and ineffective, and certainly not worth the risk where there is a benefit. And so you get to the end of these American Heart Association recommendations, and the conclusion was we need to double the number of people taking statins. The original target was 40 million Americans. Now it's 75. So it kind of, just like what you said, it sounded good, but really what they were doing was promoting, you know, more drug use. They just use a different metric instead of blood cholesterol.
Well, yeah, and it's really funny when you see how drugs and vaccines are marketed, because you will sometimes get there's an unavoidable truth out there, and what they decide to do is embrace the truth. For instance, with the pertussis vaccine, whooping cough, it doesn't prevent infection or transmission. It wanes after 18 months or less. You know, and it's evolving away from even the vaccine being effective. Outbreaks are happening in fully vaccinated individuals. And so you'll read studies about the flaws. But what is their conclusion? Let's give more doses of it.
What?
That's your conclusion. Let's do more of this failed thing, right? Yes. And the definition of insanity is like
doing the same thing, expecting a different outcome. Well, you know, and that's such a good point, Bernadette. That's how it all started. I mean, the original thinking was vaccines were just like natural immunity, and if you got exposed once, you were good for life. And that was the thinking for decades. Everybody just needs one shot, and then you're good. And then we had all these vaccine failures because of waning effectiveness, typically within 2 to 3 years for most of them. And then the solution was add more to the schedule, you know, so, you know, add more boosters to the schedule. So it was really bizarre that what we call secondary vaccine failure, which means efficacy, which is only defined in a laboratory as antibody production, wanes. So that's like primary failure is just their 5-10% of the population are quote non-responders. They won't generate an antibody response. And then you have secondary failure, which just wears off, so to speak. And so this is all, you know, rather than address, you know, well, maybe this isn't working, you know, they just add more boosters.
Yeah, exactly. So I diverted us from cholesterol. So let's talk about cholesterol. And I've always thought it was just kind of funny that, you know, they, first of all, we're mammals. And so yes. We create, our bodies generate cholesterol. We need it for brain function. Mm-hmm. Consuming cholesterol is not how we raise our cholesterol levels.
Yeah.
Our cholesterol levels are created because our bodies need it. Now you can increase, there are certain things that make you, I mean, you probably, if you could explain, like, is there good and bad cholesterol, as they say? I just know that if you eat lots of sugar and trans fats, it does something to your cholesterol. So eating eggs is not going to do it. So talk to us about, so we know that cholesterol isn't related to heart disease, but how is cholesterol related to our health, and how do you achieve what's optimal for a human?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So cholesterol is made in, it's a lipid. So it's in that category of fat type molecules. It's an organic lipid molecule. And every animal species, every animal cell in every animal species rather makes cholesterol. So every cell in our body manufactures it. About 80% comes from the liver. The next two big sources are the brain and the adrenals, but it's made by every cell in every animal species. So it's one of the most protective and important molecules in the body. It's part of every cell membrane. It's the basis for vitamin D, which we learned in the COVID era was, you know, a spectacular preventative and treatment for the COVID syndrome caused by the bioweapon. That was suppressed to get the emergency use authorization on the experimental injections. And so vitamin D is made of cholesterol, as is bile necessary, produced in the liver and stored and concentrated in the gallbladder, squished out when you eat fat, is made of cholesterol. So our bile and also our adrenal, the adrenal cortex hormones, famous ones like cortisol, cortisone, testosterone, progesterone, estrogen, aldosterone. These are pregnenolone. These are all made out of cholesterol, as are our sex hormones. All the sex hormones, the estrogens, the androgens, all made out of cholesterol. It's necessary for cells talking to each other, requires cholesterol, and nerve conduction. Our whole nervous system needs cholesterol. So it was first identified back in 1769 in France. It was named in 1815, also in France, and there was a Nobel Prize awarded for something related to that in 1964. So we make the vast majority, we make about 1,000 milligrams or a gram a day, we have about 35 grams in the whole body, an average adult. So it's an entirely benevolent molecule that is extremely important. Is there a good or bad cholesterol? No. All cholesterol, by the way, all cholesterol is only one type of cholesterol. It's one single molecule. Since it's a lipid, it doesn't float well in the blood. So it needs a box. It needs like a UPS shipping container or something like that to float in the blood, which is mostly water. So things that are lipids don't float well in water. So they need a protein box. And the protein box changes. You know, we have high density boxes, low density boxes, but the cholesterol is only one cholesterol. It's the same molecule, regardless of what box it's in, that lets it float in the blood. We make, you know, about half of what we make is reabsorbed in the small intestine. So we recycle it, so to speak. As you pointed out very significantly, Bernadette, not many people are aware that the our intake and our diet doesn't really have a lot of effect on our blood cholesterol or total body content. About 1,000 milligrams, about a gram enters our colon every day. And the average unmedicated level of cholesterol in the U.S. is about 220. That's why they lowered the upper limit, which in 1984, in the medical textbooks, the upper limit of blood cholesterol that was considered safe was 330 starting at age 59. Because cholesterol levels naturally rise with age. Why? Because it's protective. As we age, we need more protection. So the cholesterol upper limits used to be stratified according to age. And so, you know, the first drug came out in 1987. Nobody needed it because the upper limit was 330. So then they arbitrarily just made up a number, picked it out of thin air, not based on any data or evidence, that 200 was a proper upper limit. And they picked a number below the national average because it's really hard to get there without drugs. And it was very clever. And some labs now have an upper limit of 169. I had a new patient come in, said, oh, I just came from my doctor. He said, he has high cholesterol. I have high cholesterol. And he gave me Lipitor. It's a 64-year-old female. And I said, well, do you have the blood test? She said, yeah, it's right here. And it was 183. And the lab upper limit was 169. I had an endocrinologist stand up at one of my cardiovascular health seminars and said the standard of care in endocrinology for diabetics is an upper limit of 100. So they're just making stuff up, demonizing the most benevolent molecule in the body in order to sell very toxic, dangerous, ineffective drugs that just don't work. And where there is slight benefit is certainly not worth the massive risks of cognitive and muscle and nerve and liver damage.
Wow. I mean, you've really blown me away. This is far more than I ever knew about how important cholesterol is and how damaging it could be to take a product. I've been jotting down questions as you've been talking. So artificially lowering your cholesterol, first of all, has anybody yet done a study to see if there was an inordinate higher rate of severe COVID in people taking Lipitor or other cholesterol-lowering drugs?
That's a good question. That's a great question, Bernadette. I don't know the answer to that. Because of cholesterol's relationship to immune function, folks whose cholesterol is above 200 live longer, have fewer allergies, less cardiovascular disease, less infections in general. But I haven't looked at research on that exact subject. It's a great question. I want to roll back to the other question. There's regular cholesterol boxes, LDL, HDL, the two most popular ones that people know about. There is no such thing as bad cholesterol, but there is a form of damage that occurs to LDL, low density lipoprotein. Again, all cholesterol is the same, only the box changes. Where it gets what we call oxidized. So oxidized LDL, where the low density cholesterol gets damaged by, could be a range of things, from toxicity to hypoxia to poor circulation to a lot of things can damage LDL. That's called oxidized LDL. And that is a very relevant number for people to look at in their blood tests. Most physicians, unfortunately, aren't yet using it in common clinical practice. They're still focused on total cholesterol and LDL, which is meaningless. But oxidized LDL with an upper limit of 45 is a very good number. And here's why. When we look at plaque in the arteries, so plaque blocking the arteries, there's two types of plaque. One is stable plaque, which will narrow the arteries, which is not good, right? You've sometimes heard of somebody who had a coronary bypass procedure because some of their coronary arteries were blocked. And you know, that can be what we call stable plaque. It grows, it restricts blood flow, but it's not as dangerous as the second type of plaque, which is rupture prone or vulnerable plaque. This has the potential to pop or rupture and quickly form a clot. And that is what causes almost all heart attacks and 87% of strokes. You have vulnerable plaque that pops. It's like, you pop a water balloon and the water instantly comes out. This will rapidly form a clot and you die, you know, about a third of the time. If it's a heart attack, one in three heart attacks are fatal, or 20% of the time, 20% of strokes are fatal. And that's dangerous. That's the one type of dangerous cholesterol is oxidized LDL. And here's why. That vulnerable plaque is made of oxidized LDL. So the bad plaque is made of this bad LDL, which is oxidized LDL. So we want to always have low oxidized LDL. You may still have plaque. That's not a great thing if it starts to block the blood flow. That's not a good thing, but it's way less dangerous than vulnerable plaque, which can rupture and within seconds form a clot.
Okay, so two questions, and maybe the answer to the one is the solution to the other.
Oh, yeah.
What causes oxidized LDL? What lifestyle, what's going on that's causing this to happen in the body?
Yeah. Well, there's a number of factors. One is a deficiency of them. This is, this is kind of my opinion on this. I believe nutritional deficiencies play a role. Things like omega-3, things like magnesium can have a role to play. And vascular health factors, so like healthy fats, what we call vitamin P, which was named and identified in 1936 by Dr. Albert Szent-Györgyi, who won the Nobel Prize a year later for his research on vitamin C. Vitamin P, and he named it for permeability as well as Hungarian peppers, is the collagen formation factor that prevents scurvy. And this has to do with vascular integrity. The healthier blood vessels, in part, relies on adequate vitamin P from your diet. Things like buckwheat, for example, is a great source of vitamin P. Citrus peel. One of my teachers, we were out to dinner one night, and we were at a Chinese restaurant, and they brought sliced oranges at the end. And so I saw him eating the orange, and then he gnawed out the white of the orange peel. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, that's where the vitamin P is. I'm like, what's that? And that's my first exposure to it. It's in the white of citrus peel. So it's easy to get in oranges and grapefruits, which then have a thicker peel that you can eat out. So those are a couple of sources. There are others, peppers, paprika. There are other sources of vitamin P. Paprika is a nightshade, so that might not be, as are peppers, so that may not be the best source for some people, but it's found in a diverse diet. If you're eating a range of fruits, vegetables, healthy fats, plenty of pastured meats and eggs, you're going to get enough vitamin P. So anyway, that's another factor for endothelial health. And we have two herbs, and I love talking about herbs. We have a page, michaelgata.com/herbal, H-E-R-B-A-L, which is our herbal school with 10 different courses on the subject. And so there are two herbs. One lowers oxidized LDL, which is really helpful, and the other stabilizes vulnerable plaque. And this is in the peer-reviewed cardiology literature, actually. And the herb that lowers oxidized LDL, there's really no drugs that do this that I am aware of that actually reliably lowers oxidized LDL, is a modern herb. It's not found in any ancient herbal tradition. It was discovered in the 1960s in Germany, and that's ginkgo leaf. We use the nut of the ginkgo tree in Chinese medicine to treat asthma and wheezing and shortness of breath. That's the nut of the ginkgo tree, but the leaf really isn't, to my knowledge, not really a big deal in even the Chinese herbal tradition. It's not a traditional Chinese herb that we usually learn about in school or use in practice. So it's really an herb of modern science. And these, smart German dudes in the 1960s in Germany, they just started experimenting on it, and it was like insane. It was extremely effective for a range of issues. And now there's been tens of thousands of studies on ginkgo that demonstrate its usefulness. I'm just going to do a quick search. Yeah, this is 250, let me take out the citations, 211,000 studies on ginkgo. So
wow.
If you can use a good quality product like Ginkgo Forte, that's the one I give to my kids and patients, at four a day, that'll give you the kind of the sweet spot that the clinical trials tend to land on is 240 milligrams a day. If you can get in 240 a day of ginkgo, you're going to have better brain function, systemic circulation. If your oxidized LDL is high, it may lower it. You'll have better memory, cognition, focus, concentration, helps to reverse a fatty liver, improves insulin sensitivity. It just does a million things. And it's the most important herb in the world for the blood vessels, for the vascular system. Most important part of the vascular system are not the famous arteries and veins, but the microvascular, the tiny vessels, the arterioles, the capillaries, the venules. That makes up 74% of our vascular system. That vascular system, especially the tiny vessels, are very vulnerable to attack by infection, by toxins. To answer, this is all to answer your question, how does it get oxidized? We have what we call endothelial damage. The lining of the blood vessels, which is just one cell thick, is very important. And when it gets damaged by environmental toxicity, infection, nutritional deficiency, making it vulnerable to damage, a range of factors, sugar definitely causes what we call glycation damage. Then the LDL, which is generally protective, gets damaged or oxidized. Hmm. And that leads to, you know, some serious trouble, because that's what, again, what makes up the vulnerable or rupture prone plaque. So ginkgo is one. The other is a Chinese herb, Centella asiatica, leaf. And again, another leaf. This one is famously known, or commonly known, as Gotu Kola.
Oh,
the best herb for collagen formation, tissue repair, and healing, but also, like ginkgo, is a great brain tonic. In a study published in Angiology, which is a cardiology journal, actually stabilizes vulnerable plaque. So it takes the rupture-prone plaque and makes it safer by making it less likely to pop. And that's the danger. Now, again, it's not great to have blocked arteries, but it's much worse to have plaque in arteries that can burst. And mm-hmm. it actually reverses that. Gotu Kola does that. It's great. These are two great vascular help herbs. So those are a couple of things. And the last thing I'd say just about the vascular system is the research is just exploding now, like thousands of studies now, on the use of low-level, low-frequency, low-intensity electromagnetic fields. We usually think of EMF. We think of cell phones and Wi-Fi and 5G, very bad stuff. But there's low-frequency and low-intensity electromagnetic fields. We're actually therapeutic. They've been used for 100 years therapeutically and shown immense benefits to micro, again, that very important microcirculation. And an emerging model, Bernadette, of cardiovascular disease is that part of the cause of cardiovascular disease is tiny vessel problems, like poor circulation in the tiny vessels, which then messes with the big vessels and the muscle, the heart muscle itself. So there's an emerging model of cardiovascular disease that part of it, at least, is microcirculatory deficit. And so if we can improve microcirculation, that helps everything. And so I put together a page just on this subject at michaelgaeta.com/PEMF, which goes through the science and studies and studies and studies, where you can really see, and there's even a video there where you can see microcirculation massive, which is very stagnant in a healthy guy who's just stressed out. You can see how the circulation can improve dramatically with these low frequency, low intensity, kind of near the earth frequency, Schumann resonance of about 8 hertz, as well as 30 hertz. We can massively improve systemic circulation in the tiny vessels.
Oh my goodness, I've got so many questions I keep jotting down here. Would earthing, going out, staying barefoot in the grass connecting with the earth, would that be helpful in that frequency?
Totally. It is, yeah.
And it seems as if mankind discovered ginkgo just as mankind needed it because of the way mankind was harming human health in so many ways. Yes. So here it is. And then I started thinking, everything you're describing sounds like a lot of the damage of the spike protein, both from infection, but especially from the genetic therapies, otherwise called vaccines. So is that something that people could explore for...
Yeah, for sure. The spike protein is the common thread of damage from the original bioweapon, so natural infection. Before the genocide jabs were released, we had about a year of injury in some people anyway from COVID. Most people got COVID and were asymptomatic or very mild, no big deal. And the vulnerable, this always happens throughout history, though the weakest get the sickest. And some folks got, you know, prolonged injury from COVID due to the detrimental effects, mostly, not entirely, of the spike protein. Then the vaccines come out, so-called, these genetic manipulation injections, the poison death shots, the murder weapons came out. And then everything was multiplied by 1,000. All of the damage from the spike protein was amplified because now it wasn't coming from outside. It was coming from inside. And that's a very different event immunologically, where if cells are forced to produce a foreign protein, those cells will be attacked. This happens every day when, if a virus infects a cell, that cell starts producing this, problematic microbe, or the viral material, that cell will be targeted as a source of, as a problematic cell. So when you force, every cell or any cell, many of the cells and tissues of the body to make a foreign protein, you're guaranteeing that the immune system will target and attack those cells. And that's why I'm seeing this in my practice. My functional medicine students are seeing this. My patients are seeing this, is the massive explosion in autoimmune disease and in cancer. Because cancer in its very early stages, what we call initiation, is an autoimmune process. So we're seeing, a lot of damage from the spike. And if you have these circulating spike proteins, they can damage the lining of the blood vessels. And even worse, now we're seeing that the lining of the blood vessels, these endothelial cells, are actually producing spike protein, which is just totally catastrophic. You don't want your immune cells attacking your vascular system. There's no way that's a good thing. And this is one of the factors, not the only one, leading to these, massive clots and clotting disorders. I really recommend everybody get a D-dimer blood test. Mm-hmm. And that is a blood test for existing blood clots. Doesn't tell you where they are. It just tells you they're somewhere. And it's amazing, since these genocide jabs came out, I'm just seeing a lot more elevated D-dimers in my patients. The upper limit by most lab measurement values is 0.4 is an upper limit. You really don't want a lot of D-dimer around, because that proves, it confirms that your body has existing blood clots right now. And it doesn't tell you where, but it tells you they're there. And the D-dimer itself is what we call a fibrin degradation product, where as soon as you form a blood clot, you start to get rid of it. And the getting rid of it results in this D-dimer.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a measure that your body is busy fighting it. Like white blood cells is a measure that you're fighting an infection. Okay. Exactly. Very good to know. I'm going to give that number out again. Everybody's being a little bit shy, so don't be shy. Go ahead and call Dr. Gaeta at 1-888-298-5569. Again, that's 1-888-298-5569. But I'm going to ask a question that I know listeners are wanting to know. If they or somebody they love is currently taking a cholesterol-lowering drug like Lipitor, you're not giving personal medical advice here, but is it safe to just go cold turkey? What should they do if they've been listening to them and they want to take steps to get off of the drug?
Right. So, there's a hidden danger of these drugs is that people think they're safe. Not the drugs are safe, but the patient can just do whatever they want, eat whatever they want, not exercise, not eat well, not take care of their lifestyle, because they're taking a pill that gets the number down, the so-called bad number, total cholesterol, meaningless, that they engage in, they don't change their lifestyle. Just what you were saying before, Bernadette, that lifestyle factors may not change. It's like that old, I don't know if you remember that Nexium commercial, the purple pill, and it's the guy sitting in the diner eating this big, massive, greasy cheeseburger, I can eat it whatever I want as long as I take this little pill. So that it's giving people a license not to change their lifestyle. So that's a hidden side effect of statins. It's very unusual. Having treated like many, many thousands of patients over 34 years, I've never heard of a patient who got Lipitor who said, no, here are all your lifestyle changes that need to happen. But anyway, I'm not a physician. I'm not allowed to manipulate medications. What I can say, what my physician students who come to me to learn functional medicine, natural functional medicine, what they have told me invariably is that there's no need to wean off a statin. I'm not telling people to come off their drugs. That's between you or your doctor. But what I have been informed by every physician I've asked, and that's a lot, is that there's no need to wean. You can just stop. Now, that said, if a person has, if they're overweight, if their insulin and blood sugar and triglycerides are high, they have belly fat, if they have these other risk factors, if there are other blood markers which are messed up, they have to do something. But it's not totally ideal to use a statin to do that because, you know, of the immense, you know, exercise a little bit every day, 30 minutes is great, a little bit every day, preferably outside, and then some resistance training, and clean up the diet. You know, main thing is sugar. But there's no need to wean off of these drugs from what I've been told.
Wow. I want to move on because this has been such a fascinating subject that's taken almost all this time, but it's so important. How many millions of Americans are on cholesterol lowering drugs. Yeah. And I'm wondering when it was introduced in the market, if we can see any sort of correlation and if studies have been done to show the escalation of all these other health issues as cholesterol was demonized. Did we have a rise in infertility, in cognitive issues, in so many other issues related to cholesterol?
Well, you know, that's a good point, Bernadette, that, you know, we have seen a massive increase in Alzheimer's disease, for example, dementia, all these, you know, cognitive memory related diseases, which we now know have nothing to do with amyloid plaque. It's now being considered like type 3 diabetes. It's sugar damage. And a little tip, folks should, my most favorite blood test is a hemoglobin A1C, which is a good healthy aging marker, by the way. And optimal target is 5.2 or less. Lab reference ranges have an upper limit of 5.6, but the current research suggests that starting at 5.3 and up, every tenth of a point you go above 5.2, you increase your risk of Alzheimer's disease. It's really being considered now type 3 diabetes. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another, the thing that we have seen more of is memory-related diseases and a steady increase in cancer. Now, the research has been very clear about this. There's lots and lots of studies in the published medical literature. Anybody can look it up. The association between low cholesterol, especially low LDL, so-called lousy, which is absurd, low LDL and cancer. And now, you know, LDL is starting to be thought of as a cancer marker of an undiagnosed cancer. Is that true in every case? No. But there was one study, just pulling this up here. This came out of, this was published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers and Prevention. This is an 18-year study in Finland, 30,000 male smokers. And what they found, that the higher the HDL was, if it was above 40, and a better target is 60, by the way, for HDL, they had 14% lower risk of cancer when HDL was higher. And here's the messed up part. The men with lower total cholesterol, which they defined, and in that country, in Finland, low cholesterol is defined as 230, below 230. So 230 is the minimum. And if it was low, meaning below 230, they had an 18% higher risk of cancer overall.
Oh, wait. Okay. You just kind of blew my mind there. So in the United States, they're trying to keep it under 200.
Right.
And in Denmark, they're trying to keep it over 200 in order to
In this study, this was published back in 2009. This was a study in a cancer journal. Guys, smokers, again, remember, cholesterol is protective. Smoking is an insult, so you need more protection. They considered in this study of 30,000 guys studied over 18 years, big study, you know, very long duration, you know, long-term study. They define low cholesterol as below 230, which is very consistent with how it used to be before the statins came out.
Yeah.
Had an 18% higher risk of cancer overall. And it wasn't just this study. This study confirmed the same finding in several earlier, and by the way, later studies. All the studies have been very clear. Your risk of cancer is higher, definitely, the lower your cholesterol is, and especially LDL. Low LDL is catastrophic for cancer risk. Now, they're considering it now a risk factor. It's not a diagnosis. If your LDL is 80, which would be terrible, it doesn't mean you have cancer. It just means you have a greater risk of developing cancer.
And what is so insane is that I do believe through various insurance programs,
yes,
these cholesterol-lowering drugs are incentivized. They're considered, yes, standard of care, and they have, yes, been for decades, despite, yes, the fact that everything has changed. And so really this whole topic of cholesterol just demonstrates beautifully what's wrong with the medical industry.
Yes.
In the United States and other parts of the world, this, anytime you make something standard of care and it has a profitable product, and then you have a massive government agency incentivize it,
yes,
then you've got like this massive train that's almost impossible
like
to
COVID
stop.
Yes.
Right. And everybody gets incentivized and then they get penalized.
Yes.
I mean, any doctor deviates from standard of care, they're made to feel as if maybe their license could be, you know, on the line.
Oh, yeah, I got a story on that. I had a great opportunity to apprentice with a colleague who's a triple board certified Johns Hopkins trained MD, PhD cardiologist when I was in New York. And I practiced, he rented space in my clinic, and we practiced together for 4 years. And a friend of his who he went to Hopkins with was in Chicago, cardiologist. And he and his friend both realized the whole statin thing was a scam. They're like, this is nonsense. There's no evidence that these drugs safely reduce, you know, cardiovascular risk, especially in folks with no diagnosed heart disease. It's absurd. So they just stopped prescribing them. My friend got out of all the insurance plans and just went all cash, but his friend didn't. And he got a letter from Blue Cross Blue Shield. They said, we've reviewed your medical records and you haven't followed standard of care in prescribing statins for these patients, for this bunch of patients over the last many, many years. And they demanded he pay them back office visit fees in the amount of $250,000 for those office visits that he got paid on that he didn't prescribe statins, because the patient's cholesterol was probably over 200, despite a complete lack of evidence. And so he had to lawyer up and, you know, all that. And then he lawyered up again after that was done and got out of all the insurance plans and went all cash. And within, you know, weeks, he had a waiting list practice because patients wanted to see a doctor who wasn't incentivized the way you indicated. Just going to give you one quick study, European Journal of Cancer Prevention. This is back in 2018. Folks who had low cholesterol, meaning below 160, had a 52% increased risk of cancer. I mean, that's,
wow.
That's a lot. So again, I'm not saying statins cause cancer. The NIH came out with a study, which I think was kind of bogus, but I haven't gone deep on that study to kind of critique it. But I think when this stuff started to come out, NIH came out with a kind of a debated study, debatable, contested. We're not really sure how valid it was, but I'm not saying it wasn't valid. I'm saying it's been, you know, contested. They're saying that there was no association between statins and cancer. That may have been a cover study because they fabricate studies all the time to protect pharma.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm mm-hmm. saying the timing was a little funky in that when the evidence started to come out associating low cholesterol with cancer, this study suddenly came out saying,
uh-oh,
no, good, keep taking your stuff.
Dr. Gaeta has frozen. I hope we...
Oh, okay. Let's figure that out. What happens here? Okay. I'll burn it. Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, this was a major issue where, you know, it's possible. I'm not saying for sure, but they may have just been covering up a very serious drug side effect, in that statins and lowering cholesterol may be increasing, possibly maybe increasing people's risk of cancer, especially lowering LDL was, you know, very significant association between low LDL, meaning below 100, which is the national guidelines, get your LDL below 100. Folks who did that had a much higher incidence of cancer. They had and they found that with statins, every percentage reduction in LDL increased their cancer risk, which is pretty astounding. So there was, and also folks with higher HDL, and my recommended target in my own practice is 60, had a lower risk for all cancer combined. And that was published just a couple of years ago in 2022 in a study that, you know, again, got no press because it would challenge the, you know, kind of the statin juggernaut that everybody should be taking, a lot of people, 75 million people should be taking these drugs. But it's very clear that cholesterol is a negative risk factor for many types of cancers, including breast cancer in women. And that goes back to 1997, they knew that the higher your cholesterol, the less breast cancer a woman is likely to have. We knew that back in 97. In a big study with 23,000 people in Iceland. So I just think it's one of the biggest scams, probably the second biggest scam after vaccines, where it's very clear the evidence is abundant. Please read Dr. Hooker's book. He was just on my show, and I'll be on his show again soon, very clearly the healthiest children are completely unvaccinated. The sickest children are fully vaccinated according to the pharma-created CDC vaccine schedule.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, excellent. I don't know what happened to my internet here, but we've got a call in just to finish up the show, so Nathan will keep me posted when we run out of time.
Okay.
Thank you for jumping in like a pro that you are while I froze.
Oh, happy to help.
I want to say, though, you've pointed out a really important other systemic problem with healthcare today is that doctors are measured by product uptake of their patients, health outcomes, but product uptake.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I said I'm not down on physicians. I'm not really down on conventional medicine at all. It's just that the mindset is, the whole thinking, how things are practiced, it's all about the drugs. I had a physician come to one of my herbal seminar one day in Boston, and he said, he went to medical school in his 40s. So this was like his third career. And he said he loved his first 2 years of medical school because they learned how the body worked. And he says, starting in the third year, all that was almost like it never happened. And it immediately all became about the drugs. As they started doing rounds and specialties, it was like drug. He's like, wait a minute, we just learned how the body worked, all this amazing stuff. And now it's just about all the drugs. So, again, I don't blame the physicians. Many of them are my students, and they come to me to learn a natural approach. And, it's just that they're part of a broken system. That's really the issue. And so that's why, if we can keep people out of the medical system, that's a good thing. People who stay out of the medical system tend to live longer. They're healthier. They're taking less medications, and they just have a better quality of life. So I think that's an important thing. And just to answer something you asked before, Bernie, that what causes all this problem? One of the things is toxicity. And we're living, in an amazingly toxic world, astoundingly. And so we're running next week, we're doing a group cleanse online where people can do a guided detoxification program together as a group. And we're doing 5 classes that start next week, live, online from wherever you are. And folks can just go to michaelgata.com, and it's right there on the homepage, our annual cleanse. And also for clinical practice, if folks want a consultation.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. Yeah, michaelgata.com, that's G-A-E-T-A, michaelgata.com, to learn more. Michael, thank you so much for this amazing hour. We only got one subject, but it was massive, wasn't it? And it really may explain a lot of people's health issues. So I'm going to have you back on soon, and we'll tackle another major common health issue.
Love to. Thanks, Bernadette.
Yeah, thank you. I think I hear the music, so I'm going to let Nathan play a song. I've been listening to the Health Hour on 1150 AM KKNW and CHD-TV. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we have Sally Saxon, the author of an amazing new book that you need to read. So stay tuned and come back.
During this unprecedented response to an infection outbreak, it has been made very clear that shutting down lives and businesses is not sustainable or repeatable. We've also learned that it's unnecessary. Treatments exist and always exist. For 99% of the population, nutrients and oxidative therapies that support the immune system and improve symptoms are always available to address viral infections. For the less than 1% who need more, inexpensive, unpatentable drugs can be added to the nutrient therapies to improve outcomes. It's time each and every one of us empower ourselves with this knowledge. We need not ever bring our lives to a halt again. We can both save lives and retain the liberty that nourishes us body and soul. Learn more at healthyimmunitynow.org. That's healthyimmunitynow.org.
Children's Health Defense is a nonprofit organization with a mission to end childhood health epidemics by working aggressively to eliminate harmful exposures, hold those responsible accountable, and establish safeguards to prevent future harm. The Washington chapter of Children's Health Defense is stepping up at the state and local levels, but we can't do this without you. Join us at wa.childrenshealthdefense.org. Let's restore and defend children's health and their futures in Washington State.
The information contained in this episode is for informational purposes only. No material is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment.